This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cloud Blue Podcast. This is our Q&A episode sponsored by NordVPN. If you want the best discount code off your NordVPN plan, you can go to the link in the description down below. I'm your host for this episode, Dan Rowlandson, joined by John Townley and Matt Kendrick for a bumper episode because we've won a massive game at the Emirates. This is our Q&A episode. As I said, we'll get into that in a second. Gents, how are we? Matt, first, you all right?
I'm all right, yeah. Like I said, I'm a bit fragile because I had a busy weekend, but it was topped off by, can we call it a surprise?
Yeah, that's probably what you want.
I was absolutely gobsmacked. I was just, for the first half, I was kind of watching through my fingers a little bit, thinking Klingon. And then second half, I was still thinking, there's going to be a sting in the towel here. But it was just
magnificent. There also was, yeah.
It was just magnificent. I thought it was brilliant. And I know you only asked me how I was, but I'll keep rattling anyway. I've seen a lot of people saying it was better than the Man City performance at Villa Park. I'm not quite sure. Where do you stand on it, John, in terms of ranking those two?
No, I wouldn't say it was better than City. City, we were dominant for 90 minutes. But taking into context, we're playing at the Emirates, so it does balance itself out, I suppose. Yeah. That is probably the best performance you could put in against Arsenal away from home. Mm. Then we probably put in the best performance we could do at home against City. So in a roundabout way, they were almost equal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so let's say Man City was our best home performance and Arsenal was our best away performance, and agree on that.
Yeah. John, how are you? We've started the episode. How are you, mate?
I'm doing very well, mate. The last, I don't know how many hours, have just been a blur. Like, going out of London after the game, I missed my tube back, so I had to run across London for like 20 minutes, which wasn't fun. But yeah, I'm here. I'm back home. And wow, just as Matt said, I said to the some of the Villa staff after the game, like, it's never good being lost for words as a reporter, but that's what it felt like. Those, you know, when Bailey scored, between the Bailey and the Watkins goal, winning the game, it was... like, wow, okay, really didn't expect us to win. We did say in the preview, to be fair, that Villa, if they played well, could get a draw, get a result. Potentially, we have a good record at the Emirates, and Arsenal will probably have an eye on their game against Bayern Munich. And I'm not going to take anything away from Villa, though, because we had less rest time, didn't we? And we have a huge time ourselves. We controlled the second half, and yeah, just elated with it, mate. Really, really, really pleased, and about what it means as well. 1 point would have been a massive bonus. 3 points just feels like, you know, wow. We dropped 2 points against Brentford, but then we gained 3 on Arsenal. So, you know, over the course of the season, I think we'll be okay to finish fourth now.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? I said in about a 5-minute monologue in the post-match show yesterday, I'm speechless. It's like, well, I'm not, because I've just been waffling on for however long, but I had that feeling of like, I don't know what I've just seen kind of thing. You're right about like the drop points against Brentford and then gaining against Arsenal. It's 4 points out of those two games. If you'd have flipped it to beat Arsenal, if you'd flipped it to beat Brentford and get a point at Arsenal, that's a good set of results. So the fact it's the other way around is weird. But to beat Arsenal, knowing that the day before Spurs have already lost, if we'd have lost ourselves 1-0, 2-0, you'd have probably come out of that going, you know what, we all expected it. It's not harm the goal difference too much. It's not the end of the world. You know, our season is not going to be defined upon that game at the Emirates. But to go and win and do it in the manner that we did, we said all along, haven't we, for a couple of weeks now, Villa need probably two more wins this season to guarantee top five. And for one of those wins to come as early as Arsenal, with one more win needed in the remaining five, puts us in a fantastic position. Whether fifth is enough is, you know, still remains to be seen. But we're now thinking, well, fourth's definitely on. And that's a great position to be in. There's really, really something to play for here.
I'm just the scenes in the away end got me. I'm so jealous of. I know John. I don't think John was in the away end. I know he said he'd been doing a lot of running around. I don't think he can run from the press box to the away end. I'm so jealous of everybody. I don't get FOMO that often, but I did yesterday seeing those scenes. And there's a guy, a Villa fan I know called Alex Davies, who goes home and away. And he tweeted last night saying he's been to all, except for the one in lockdown, he's been to all of Villa's wins at Arsenal, but that one was the best. I think because I went to the one against, Gabby and a cliche own goal quite early on in the O'Neill. And then I think Darren Bent scored a couple in Houllier's season. And then there was the Christian Benteke, kind of Antonio Luna one. And then there was the lockdown one. I was jealous of Ash because he was there for that one. But I think, you know, I think old Johnny come lately here, I think has been lucky enough to witness the finest one so far. I mean, who
so
knows?
Far, yeah.
Yeah, you're very privileged, John, to be there. You're lucky, yeah. Man.
Yeah, that is it. I was going to say at the top, like, it has been a privilege to cover Villa this season anyway, because of the access I have, etc. But for the away fans as well, just felt like they deserved this season throughout what we've had in the last few years. They didn't stop during the game, and the scenes when Villa scored. I feel like the Emirates is probably the best ground for away limbs, especially when it obviously comes in that goal as well. Yeah. I think that was the end that Luna scored his goal in, like, the last minute, that counter-attack that Matt was alluding to there. And yeah, we have fond memories at the Emirates, so that was kind of, again, why I was thinking, oh, Villa could probably get a point out of this, because we just have a good record, we have good memories at the Emirates. And yeah, full credit to the players, full credit to Emery. Obviously, he was never going to admit it himself, but it would have felt sweet going back to Arsenal. You know, would have been bursting with pride. Martinez as well, giving three, maybe four of those fist bumps at the end of the game. Like, it just felt like a massive win. And to do it against Arsenal, a team who are quite dislikable, to be honest, throughout the season. We've said it before. I don't think that's, being rude. Arteta in his press conference after the game was really prickly, and all the questions he was asked by a journalist, which is a completely normal question, is why did you start Trossard ahead of Martinelli? And he just said, because I'm the manager. Like, come on, like, yeah, help us out here. He said that Arsenal could have been 5-0 by half time as well. So, yeah,
did he give any? I've not seen his presser, I've not seen his
He called Villa a top team, and I think that's about as far as he wanted to push it. But you're always going to be sour grapes after the match. But Arteta and Arsenal in particular do seem to have that kind of way about them. But yesterday, it just felt like Villa, because they dominated that second half so much, there almost wasn't room for Arsenal to complain about decisions or for players to fall around, you know, outside the box like a few of them have this season. But it just, do you know what I mean? We dominated and controlled the match so well. It was just our match, and there was almost no time or effort in Arsenal's performance from media after the game. It was just like, well, yeah, Villa did a number on you again this season. So, terrific.
Yeah, I saw Gary Neville's post-match podcast that he does up in the gantry with whoever the main commentator is, Peter Drury, in this instance, saying how, like, Emery had manufactured the game and he knew exactly how to get that win this afternoon, to kind of dig in deep in the first half, basically still being it at 0-0 at half time, and then totally flip for the second half and start to play and start to create. And there was a moment early on in the second half where we played out and got ourselves out from the back, and you could see that give us a bit of a lift. And if we can do that here against this team, we can go on and kind of start to control this game. And it did feel like that with hindsight of having seen more of the game back. Obviously, I watched it live at the time, but I've gone back and watched bits again. It felt like that kind of manufactured, this is how we're going to go to it. We're going to keep it tight in the first half, and then we're going to go at them in the second. And that's how it played out. And it was done to perfection. Emery outclassed Arteta for the second time this season.
I think, you know, the thing that I've seen, I know we're going to take some of the questions in a bit, the thing that I've seen is, I think sometimes we feel like we're victims of this. You know, everybody's playing the league tables, only showing the top three because that's the title race, and Villa were an afterthought and stuff like that. And I think sometimes in the past I thought, oh, come on, get over ourselves. But it has been blatant, I think, yeah, ahead of this game and around this game. And listen, I'm not sure it's my place to say this, so it's appropriate, but don't you think that big broadcasters, should we even have the option now where post-match and pre-match, we have like, it has to be 10 minutes chat on one team and it has to be 10 minutes chat on the other team, or there's a button you can press to like shut them up going on about one team. And I don't know, I just find that, yes, as much as that was an Arsenal story and a Manchester City story and a Liverpool story yesterday, that was an Aston Villa story as well, because it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't it's probably a Crystal Palace story as well. It wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a backs to the wall, was a little bit in the first half, but it wasn't a backs to the wall kind of smash and grab. It was a controlled Unai Emery masterclass. And even the post-match stuff when they're asking Ollie Watkins what it's like to score against his boyhood team, and Emi Martinez talking all about Arsenal, you're thinking, you know, I'm not sure that would have happened the other way around. I mean, I don't know whether like Ben White was a Villa. Ben White's not even a football fan, is he? I don't know whether Ben White was a Villa fan anyway. But anyway, I digress. Go on.
Quick quiz question before we move on, before we get into the questions from the audience. When was the last time we lost a game in the capital? Do either of you know? We've got a good record now away in London against London clubs. John's raised his hand for those that are listening. Matt, do you know when it is?
I don't want to steal John's thunder. Go for it, John.
John, when was it?
Was it that nightmare, that autumnal night back in October 2022, Steven Gerrard, final game?
It was, yeah. The last time we lost against a London club away from home was Steven Gerrard's final game. Unai Emery has never lost an away game in the capital. Just in terms of, again, a follow-up question, I've got the results in front of me. We've played 11 games against London clubs away from home in that time under Unai Emery, 33 points available. Do you want to have a guess at how many points we've taken against those sides?
26.
27.
It is 27. Unbelievable knowledge from you, John. Unlucky for you, Matt, to be one out. Dating back to last season, then we beat Spurs, drew to West Ham, beat Chelsea and drew against Brentford. This season, beat Chelsea, beat Spurs, beat Brentford, beat Fulham, beat Luton, drew to West Ham and beat Arsenal. So almost a maximum record against London clubs, which is well, for you, John, it's a bit of a nightmare to get down to London and deal with the tubes and all that kind of stuff. But you go there knowing we're probably going to win.
To be fair, I actually quite like going to the... Well, not just because we've won the games, but it's quite simple to get to and the tubes are very helpful. Apart from last night, I just missed my stop completely. I was clearly just thinking about other things, obviously. And I got off at Oxford Circus, which is like 40 minutes walk from where I needed to be. So I had to run for 20 minutes. And anyway, like my best memories from this season so far have actually been... the games in London, like the away performance against Fulham, like the away games in themselves just feel extra special for me. I'd never really done away days before this season. So following Villa, not in the away end, obviously, which will be a totally different experience to what I have, but it feels like you're, like trespassing and you're like you're on someone else's, well, you are literally on someone else's turf, but it doesn't feel right that you can go there and just dominate a game. And you're like me anyway, I'm usually packed in with the home fans, especially in the Luton game, which is that classed as London, Dan? Have you put that into the London team?
Yeah, just about, isn't it? I think Bedfordshire, according to which is 29 miles of London, which is, yeah, it's near enough to count it.
We'll class it. But yeah, some of the memories that we have from playing away in London's this season have been fantastic. And yeah, the away games in general just feel extra special because, yeah, you're kind of among the home fans, and it's just, yeah, it probably speaks volumes of what team we are as well. Our away record in general before Emery turned up, I'm sure, wasn't particularly good. And now it's, I think Man United are the only London club to have had a better unbeaten record in London, if that makes sense. They've got three more than us. So what are we now on? Is it 11 unbeaten in London? Mm-hmm. So Man United have had 14. That's the record of the Premier League era. So if we have... three more unbeaten games in London next season, then Palace as well. So
Palace,
yeah, we can set a record next season.
Right, let's move on to audience questions then. But before we do, here's a word from our sponsors, NordVPN.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly. From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons. This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Into the questions then, and we're going to start with not a question from Caroline, who says, Emery and Villa deserve huge credit. Having played Thursday night and missing key players and still won that game was amazing. I was dreading the game all week, especially without Luiz and Kamara. Villa do not get enough credit. That's something that kind of goes under the radar after the fact, isn't it, John, that we've done that without Douglas Luiz. You almost forget that he wasn't playing because of how the result goes. But before the game, it was him getting that yellow card is going to cost us. Arsenal is going to be really difficult to go and do that without Douglas Luiz and Kamara, obviously, who played in the reverse fixture. It kind of elevates how special that was.
In general, just throughout the season, as Matt said earlier, like the top three teams plus Tottenham, Newcastle and Chelsea seem to, and Man United, get a lot of the media attention, which, you know, the Big Six, etc., has got a bigger fan base abroad. Well, I don't know, maybe that's the reason. But this is an incredible story. You know, it's not touching what Leicester did. I'm not saying that. But to have the amount of injuries we've had, and throughout the season too, Mings, Buendia, Jacob Ramsey, Boubacar Kamara, all out for the season as of a few weeks ago. It's just phenomenal. And what Emery's done, the injuries speak volumes of what an incredible job he's done, because we go into, as you say, somewhere like Arsenal without our double pivot, basically. Tielemans and McGinn aren't supposed to play there. That's not their position this season. Yes, they can do it, and they did it very, very well. But they're coming up against the midfield made up of Odegaard, Rice, Havertz, and his runs into the box cause us problems. But Diego Carlos was colossal in defence. Zaniolo played his best game for Villa. But this is all because of what Emery's, asked his player to buy into. It's tactical meetings. They had three meetings on Sunday before they played Arsenal. I don't even know where that would fit in with the schedule, because they'd have breakfast, one meeting, go somewhere, second meeting, back to the hotel, third meeting, go to the game. It feels like an absolute overload, but again, testament to Villa's recruitment, I suppose. These players are taking on board every message that Emery has asked of them. And yeah, the injuries and suspensions, it hasn't fazed us this season. Although what you could probably say is that if we didn't have a Kamara injured, or Mings, Buendia, whoever, pick whoever you want from the list, we'd probably be breathing down Arsenal's neck right now. We'd probably be 6, maybe 9 points better off. I genuinely believe that.
And
we would probably be in a situation where if we won all of our remaining games, we'd be in a shout for being, in the title race, that sort of situation. And that's how well we've done this season. And yeah, it's completely glossed over by the media because they'd rather talk about other things. But that's why podcasts are brilliant, and that's why we do our podcast, to try and shine a light on it.
This is the kind of big club mentality, in a way, that we've got to really trust. It's hard, isn't it? Because by definition, the regular starting 11, I know there's not such a thing, but they're going to be superior to your fringe players. But like John says, Zaniolo has, struggled to convince, I think, during a lot of his time at Villa. Starting to step up now when we really need him. There's a player called Morgan Rodgers who probably not many of us had really heard much about from the Championship, that's been plucked for a lot of money still for a kid of his age, but an absolute bargain. And one who we thought was probably going to be perhaps for the future, for next season or whatever, who has stepped up and grown in confidence and impact, kind of game by game. We've got Youri Tielemans, who at the start of the season, yes, he's a FA Cup winner, so he comes with a high pedigree, but when he came in at the start of the season, didn't seem ready for the demands of a Premier League season. Then not only has he become a pivotal player, but like John said, he can adapt to playing in different positions across midfield. So all of a sudden, we know all the players that we're without, but these players have stepped up. So, yes, we could dream about what would have happened if we'd have had everybody available, but we didn't. We've gone with what we've got. And it's a credit to Unai Emery that he never gets too high and he never gets too low. Well, he gets high when we score a goal. He's like a Tasmanian devil, you know, around his technical area. But he's so measured. And as much as I loved the Emi Martinez giving it the Jurgen Klopp, Gary O'Neill, whoever it is, kind of fist pumps at the end, I still prefer that it's him rather than our manager who conducts himself with absolute class in everything that he does. So, I think it's a testament to the squad that Emery's building. And the last time we came anywhere close to this was under O'Neill, and it fell away mainly because those understudies couldn't step up. He didn't trust them. So I think Emery, I think it's not only his tactics, it's his man management of keeping fringe players really involved and making sure that they feel emotionally part of it and they feel capable to get that information and run with it just as well as those ones who have played three or four times as many games as them this season.
Danny says, we saw a back six with McGinn and Tielemans sitting in while defending against Arsenal. We saw this a lot last season and when we kept a lot of clean sheets. Is this something we should see more often for the rest of this season because we seem to have more control?
Yeah, I think specifically when you go into Arsenal away, that is going to work better than not. And I think other teams have tried to deploy it, but we have the best goalkeeper in the world in Emi Martinez, who makes a world-class save to deny Trossard. For everything that we can do tactically, Emery is still going to be relying on a bit of brilliance from his individuals to win at Arsenal. You know, we can't get away from that. But tactically, how we set up, where was spot on, it denied Arsenal. Apart from a couple of chances, they didn't really threaten us a whole lot more. And I know that Arteta said that they could have been 5-0 up at half-time and whatever. But, they got in some decent positions, but you still got to beat the goalkeeper. It doesn't really matter. Do you know, I don't know how to explain that. Like, their XG was like just over one. Villa's in the second half was over one as well. So by that assumption, would it be 5-all by full-time? I don't know. I think against Bournemouth, are we going to play six at the back? I don't think so. And Chelsea as well. Those two home games now are huge. And we'll do a different video on it, Dan. But I'm very tempted to say what I'm going to say in that video. But I guess we can wait for that.
No, hold it. Hold it. Keep coming back for more, John.
Yeah. And potentially we do that against Liverpool when we're out of possession. As you say, more control. But I think in the final games of the season, we need to play against the team that we're playing against, if that makes sense. I don't think there's a fixed way that we should be playing, but I totally agree with the question. And I'm a bit surprised we haven't done that in previous games as well, and we've been a bit more open against some teams. But then equally, Tottenham at home, for example, we changed quite dramatically into a more defensive shape and it didn't work. I'll be the first to say I think Emery got that wrong, and he'll admit that as well. We'll learn from that, and that's probably one of the two occasions that you could probably criticise Emery tactically in about 18-20 months, so we'll let him off. But I do agree with the sentiment that that was probably the base of which we were allowed to play. And that Emery said after full time, like in the first half, our plan was to keep Arsenal at bay, get to half time with the match level. Then in the second half, we'll play more and we'll press on to them and we'll try and dominate, control the match. Because again, Arsenal, no one can tell me that they weren't looking at that game on Wednesday. Mentally, it's there. Like, it's there for them. And Liverpool losing, yes, would have given them a big impetus. But then at the same time, playing against the top Villa team.
Pressure as well.
Which again gets overlooked, I think. Like, as we said earlier, everyone's talking about Arsenal and Liverpool. We're fourth. Like, this is fourth against second, was it? Or fourth against third? That's a huge game. Like, I remember back in the day when it would be like Chelsea against Liverpool, Andy Gray or whatever on the commentary. That's like the main event. When it's Villa-Arsenal, it's Arsenal against... who are Arsenal playing this weekend? Oh, Villa, okay.
Yeah.
What? How many points are we from Arsenal? Probably about six or seven. I don't know, something like that. If this was a longer season, we'd be saying, "Oh, maybe we could break ground with them again in the coming weeks." So it's waffling on again. But the formation that we set up was very effective.
Okay, well, let's move on. Matt, I'm coming to you for this one. Rich says, do we concentrate more defensively against the top sides rather than against teams that we feel like we probably should be beating? Can we take lessons from our game against Brentford for the game against Bournemouth coming up?
you know, like John says, it's probably very similar to the last question. You know, when you are going to go to the Emirates, what they're capable of. Was it something like that scored two goals in most of their last, however, I can't remember. Yeah. John's the stat man. But you know that you've got to, that's probably your first starting point. When your first starting point at home to Brentford, yes, you've set out with the intention of keeping a clean sheet, but your probably first starting point is how do we take the lead? How do we, you know, at Arsenal way, you probably think you've got to play your way into the game first before you can start to get a little bit more adventurous. And because of what we've come to expect at Villa Park, we're quite demanding now against teams that we think we should beat. So, but I think it's, like I said, I think Diego Carlos, he worried me on the back of his last couple of performances. Hopefully that will, I don't know, I think sometimes we get stuck in the kind of social media environment of somebody's flavor of the month for one performance, and then they're human, they make a mistake and we write them off and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that's where, as kind of Villa fans, we've got to learn to hold our nerve, because it's our automatic default setting to think, well, this is all gonna turn to crap, isn't it? All the wheels are gonna fall off here. What was the question?
You pretty much answered it. We seem to have
probably a little bit of complacency creeps in against the so-called lesser teams, and when we play against the so-called better teams, we're super concentrated. So yeah, cut all the other crap out before that and just leave that bit.
All right, let's move on to a couple of players' potential futures. We'll do two in one go. I'll ask them both in one go. Jamie says, if Zaniolo was to perform to that level in our remaining matches, would you sign him permanently? And Ricardo says, could we offer Luca Dean a new deal that gives him an extra year or two but reduces his salary? His wages are obviously an issue, but he's so bloody good. Matt, I'll come to you first on Zaniolo, which I think, if I remember correctly, it was you and me did a podcast, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or something, where it was, if Zaniolo is the answer, what is the question? And we were kind of going, what does he offer? Should we keep him around? Since then, he's been pretty good, hasn't he? And I think that was probably his best game for us so far.
We deserve the credit for sparking him into life, Dan, really. Only a little bit of tough love. That's all it was. We've got nothing against the guy. I don't know. It's a really, I think, This is me really swerving and fudging the answer here. But
that's all right, I'll come to you in a second.
I think we need to know what the next month's going to bring before we start assessing what we go forward with, because we'll have a clear idea of what the demands are on us next year. We'll have a better idea of how much cash we've got coming into the coffers. We'll have several of our players, you know, obviously in different types of players and different positions, but we'll have Jacob Ramsey back fit. We'll have potentially Emi Buendia back fit at the start of next season. We'll have Tyrone Mings back fit at the start of next season. We'll have Kamara back fit at the start of next season. So I think Daniolo's giving himself more of a chance to have pushed for something permanent than if we'd have had this conversation a month ago. I think I still would like to see, you know, if he's doing that, if he's involved in doing that over the next five games, then, or, you know, hopefully 6, 7, 8 games in, if we progress in Europe, then I think he'll give Emery a decision to make. But I wouldn't just yet.
John, is this a player who is playing for his future, playing knowing that he could seal a permanent move, or is this someone who's genuinely improved?
I think he's, well, Emery said something's changed in the last 2 months. I don't think he knows what exactly that is either. It's a tricky one, because Villa have obviously got an option to buy him for, what, 25 or so million pounds? That's quite a lot of money for a club.
As much as that? I thought it was less than that.
Yeah, and I don't know whether at the end of the season, because we can obviously activate that with certain things, but then at the end of the season, if we went to Galatasaray and said, hi, can we? Hi. Straight opening for a negotiation. You know, with that price can maybe come down, but this is a player who has been, and I don't want to sound negative here, so far he's had a few good performances. You know, we can't get around that. He's fantastic against Arsenal. And I think he has an impact to have in the final weeks of the season. And we'll see what happens. But I think he's probably playing for his own future, not necessarily at Villa. And that's okay. Like, he's really come out and said that he knows that he's probably going to be playing elsewhere, potentially going back to Italy in the summer. I don't think this is a player who is completely settled in Birmingham, who's wanting to fight for his place moving forward. I think he's probably thinking about himself, which again is totally fine. He's a loan player, and I don't think Villa ever thought that they were going to sign him permanently again, unless these you know, clauses were met. And therefore, if they were met, he would have had a very good season. Sorry. But I think Villa can probably find better value, to be honest with you, for 25 or so million pounds for a player in his position. If you look at Morgan Rodgers, Villa spent 8 million on him. That's a fraction. And I think Morgan Rodgers can become the player, can become a better player than what we've seen from Zaniolo in the first few months of next season. And again, I'm not trying to criticise Zaniolo in what I'm saying. I'm just, you know, we can't ignore the fact that he has underperformed up until the last few weeks. So yeah, hopefully in the next few games, he can have an impact, as I say, in the Conference League as well. But no, I wouldn't be, you know, asking Galatasaray about new conditions or terms about a deal yet. I think let's just let Zaniolo play his football, because clearly whatever he's doing at the moment is working for him.
About Luka Dean then, just quickly Googling, he turns 31 in July, a player that is probably on his last big contract, you could argue, in terms of his wages and the contract length. The question about can we offer him, you know, improved terms in terms of contract length but reduce his salary is probably quite a rarity in modern football, and it's depending on who wants him and what his suitors are. If it is talk of a Saudi Arabia move or something, then yes, that there is somebody, or MLS maybe, there is somebody out there that might pay his wages, which are big. Is it likely, do you think, is it feasible that Villa say, here's a new 2-year deal, for example, but we want you to halve your wages? Is that something that happens in 2024 football?
He's got a contract until 26, hasn't he? So I'd be staggered if Luka Dean accepted that. He would just come back with, well, I've been a key player for you this season. Why do you want to reduce my wage? I absolutely understand the question. I think, yeah, in a perfect world, I'd like that to happen. Of course, we want our players to be playing on less wages with you know, as good output, if not better. But no, I can't see that happening again. I don't know what happened with Luka Dean this summer. Obviously, last summer there was a situation where there was interest. Villa, obviously, you know, they would like to shift some of their big earners if possible. And this was a Luka Dean not playing anywhere near the level he has this season, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. And this is why he stayed at the club and Villa didn't, in the end, go after Acuna from Sevilla. So, yeah, I can't see a new deal for Luka Dean in either which way, because, again, his big earner is entering the kind of the last, not, I wouldn't say the last years of his career, but you know what I mean? He's not. This is probably his peak, which is great for this season, hopefully next season as well. But no, I can't see a new deal being offered to him, especially on lower terms.
If Luka Dean is to leave, then it needs to be worth Villa's while in terms of a fee. I think John's just said that. And I don't know. I think if you sell him, he's got 2 years left. He's still kind of effectively in his prime. I think he's still, you know, don't think he's suffered from that many injuries, has he? I think he's generally been available.
Yeah, he had a little hamstring one earlier, but you are right. Nothing worth.
So I think you create a problem that you don't necessarily need. I think having him and Moreno, I think, is good competition. We know that there's potentially going to be pressure to trim the wage bill. I suppose if you move the problem somewhere else, you have the same debate about different players in different positions. But yeah. I certainly can't see a world in which they say, we're going to let you stay until you're 36, but, you know, you're only going to get paid £10 a week. You know, I don't think a contract, isn't it? And I'm not saying Luka Dean. I don't know why I'm even thinking about Luka Dean going in some kind of bomb squad, but I'm not sure that Luka Dean would say, you know, most footballers would probably stay till the end of the contract, wouldn't they? Or really, really try and get their agent to work and move elsewhere. I'm not sure anybody really would accept lower terms for a longer deal. Would you, Jet? Would you, Dan?
No, I definitely would not. Yeah, Luka Dean is here for 2 years on this money. If he's steady, if he is to get a new deal, it's not going to be on reduced terms, is it?
Yeah, and just on that, I think it's probably worth saying that Luka Dean is very settled in Birmingham as well. He didn't want to leave Villa in the summer. His family's settled well. He obviously he's playing in the Premier League as well. And what I would say there as well, you know, even if you were to reduce his wage, it's still a lot of money. You know, Luka Dean reducing his wage or a different player coming in on a lower wage is probably quite significant. So Villa, again, they have decisions to make in the summer. They have a few players who are on big deals in positions where they have, or they could add depth, but again, as Matt says, would it be worth taking those players out to then bring someone else new in, even though they've just had a fantastic season? So it's tricky, and it's just a shame that Villa have to be in that position because of PSR, etc., that we're looking at potentially shifting players and bringing other ones in maybe to balance things. You just want to have this squad and then add to it quite easily. And yeah, Villa might do that, but their wage bill is, or has ballooned in recent years. Their wage to revenue turn, wage to revenue ratio is one of the highest in Europe. So it's it does need to be trimmed, but it can be done by selling other players, fringe players. I don't know. We'll see and wait what happens. I don't want this to be negative, by the way. It's just Luka Dean had an exceptional season. We're just talking about his future because, we were asked by we're asking the question, weren't we? So.
Yeah. Let's go for another question then. From Hulberto and Tom, who both ask about Morgan Rogers. Tom says, how impressed have you all been with Morgan Rogers? He seems to be getting better every single week. He reminds me of Jacob Ramsey with his driving runs and seems a great talent. Hulberto says, can we please talk about Morgan Rogers? How high is his potential? 10 million feels like a major bargain, and I'm sure he will play for England. When he does play for England, the number nine rivalry at England level is nuts. John, that is a reference to the number nine bus route between Halesowen and Stourbridge, and that is a reference between Morgan Rogers and Jude Bellingham for England. Halesowen versus Stourbridge for England. That's the reference there. Your face is, Tommy, you totally missed it. Matt, you understand what I'm talking about, don't you?
I am. I think it's probably... I didn't think anybody other than me did things that were that contrived, but fair play for the background work that's gone into that. I mean, in terms of... I mean, Dan, you're a Halesowen boy. I crossed from Rowley Ridge, crossed the border from Rowley Ridge into Halesowen. I don't know. So I got extra pride for him because he's a local lad, play for Halleshawks, etc. I'm just trying to think, with the exception of Lee Sharp, has this area produced? I know Jude Bellingham's slightly over the border, so he's half decent. But has Halesowen produced any more famous sons?
Oh, the only kind of inroad I can think of is players that have played for Halesowen Town rather than are Halesowen born and bred. And I can't even think of many players that have played for Halesowen Town off the top of my head, but I know there's been some famous faces on the back end of their careers turn up at the Grove over the
road. This is a great conversation, by the way. I'm just listening.
We need to get John on a pub crawl around Halesowen, mate. Get him properly immersed. It can be like the Morgan Rogers tour, can't it? And we can just kind of... he's quality of it, you know. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. I thought he was kind of one for the future. You know, he might have come on and played a 5-minute cameo here, and
that might have been the plan if Jacob Ramsey was still fit.
But the fact that Emery's trusted him, and he's trusted him when he's left Diaby on the bench, and he's trusted him when he's left Bailey on the bench. And I know it's kind of horses for courses and stuff. I think I just like his physical strength and his kind of acceleration and his power. And, you know, considering he's a young man making his name in the Premier League, I can't believe how many of his opponents have wanted his shirt mid-play so far, because they tend to kind of grab him and tug him and all this kind of stuff. And he just powers through. And I think psychologically for Emery to trust himself to be involved in the kind of high stakes end of the season, I think we've got a gem on our hands. I really do.
And I don't want this to be an anti-Tierney Raboonham thing, but that is how this is going to come across. But it appears that John's face is thinking, where the hell is this going? It appears, and this is only speculation, that Emery does not feel that Raboonham is ready to come in and start games. In a period where Douglas Luiz and Kamara are both unavailable, if he is a natural fit for that role and still isn't getting game time, you would think, well, he's not quite ready, or he doesn't quite trust him. But for Morgan Rogers to be playing Championship football 3 months ago, to be plucked in to now be playing Premier League football and going to somewhere like the Emirates and not running the show, but certainly holding his own and having a really great performance, shows that he does have trust and faith in him. So that tells me how good of a player he is if Emery trusts him to go and to do that. That's where the Tim link comes from.
Yeah, you lost me on it. But yeah, I get that. Being, I said that myself when the team news came out, because this was the game I thought Tim were playing. But yeah, probably doesn't trust him as much. But again, that's fine. There's a reason why he didn't go out on loan, and that's because Emery thought he'd be better off working with him at Bodymore rather than playing in the Championship for, I don't know, Swansea. On Rogers, what I really like about him is he's very grounded. He's been to City. and that can change a person probably, but it didn't for Morgan Rogers. And it's his work ethic and speaking to people who know him best, and other reporters as well that have covered him in when he's played for Lincoln and Middlesbrough, Blackpool. They all spoke highly of his attitude to learn and work and develop, and that for Emery is more important than someone's ability there and then. So I can see him coming on leaps and bounds in the next 6 months. He's already come on a long way, yeah. I think, in six games. So, yeah, fantastic. And again, on a side note, speaks very well to reporters in the mix zone, stuff like that, which goes a long way, I think, because, it shows, I don't know how to put this, but he's clearly a good lad. Like, he clearly gets on with the players in the dressing room, which is important. We've seen this before with the players that Dean Smith signed. It was a policy that you need to be a good person as well as a good footballer. Yeah. So, Morgan Rogers ticks all the boxes. He's a local lad as well. It's almost like the full package there. It's fantastic signing, and full credit to Monchi on this one, and Emery, of course, who pushed for his signing as well. But to get him for 8 million, rising to 15, though, that 15 is if he hits big targets like England, club level, that sort of stuff. I don't know if there was other interest from other clubs, but you kind of think, how are we the only ones that can see this? When he was doing it for Middlesbrough, he was at City, unknown to most football fans maybe, but people who were in football, absolutely, know who Morgan Rogers is. He was the thing when he was 17 in 2019, when he went from West Brom to Man City. So, he wasn't hiding anywhere. He was there. So, yeah, fantastic bit of business from Villa to get him.
I was going to say, I love the fact that Monchi knows the Howells are insane. he's clearly... he might see me down Power League on Sunday, Monchi. Just... I might need to work with a conditioning coach, but... and a tactician and somebody to work on my first touch, but there's something in there.
still raw at your grand old age. Just one on recruitment, so John, you mentioned there about good personalities is as important as being a good footballer. You've got to be involved in the team and be a good human being, basically. Welsh Villain asks that Zaniolo and Rogers both add size to the team, which has lacked height this season. Is Emery seemingly conscious of that issue when looking to recruit? And does that improve Zaniolo's chances of staying? I've kind of spoken about Zaniolo staying and whatnot, but that kind of talent idea, I suppose, and spotting the weaknesses to not just go, well, we need a left winger, so let's go for this player because he's got good dribbling stats, just massively simplifies it. And that's not how clubs would do it. But there's a more rounded package that they're good people. They have different physical profiles to the team. We're missing these individual statistics that we need to try and get back in the side. And someone like Morgan Rogers feels like the perfect amalgamation of we need all of those characteristics. Oh, there's a perfect player for that.
Yeah, and in quite a few games this season, I've literally just looked at us defending set pieces and thought, well, we have a couple of players over 6 foot, which is never a good sign when most Premier League teams, some teams, it's like the land of giants sometimes when you're playing against West Ham, Luton, Everton, that sort of thing, and it's bizarre how they don't get more success from set pieces. Some clubs, most of them do, granted, and so do we in a different way through set piece routines, etc. But having players that have that profile, that size, that stature, presence, whatever you want to call it, they can play a role in both boxes, and that's something that Ollie Watkins does very well. I think he's quite underrated at that, defending set pieces at the front post. Rogers can do it similarly. And yeah, Zaniolo too. I don't think this would be a situation where Villa think, right, Zaniolo is this tall, therefore, that's another tick and we should sign him. I think, there's a lot of footballers who are above 6 foot. I know that's not the question and sounds silly, but I don't think that's going to be a huge motivating factor for Villa to then pursue the permanent signing of Zaniolo. But, I think, definitely it's a factor. Saying that, we will have size in our team again once we have Kamara back, once we have Mings back, those players, so that, will kind of come back to help us. But yeah, definitely a point. The Premier League is so physically strong compared to other divisions, leagues as well. Fonseca, it's like the first thing he said when talking about Villa, he said, well, always the Premier League teams are very strong and physically good. And that is something that, going away there, we're going to have to prove as well. Players like Miggy, and they're going to have to step up again and try and dominate the midfield, because we're not going to get a whole lot of the ball, I don't think, because Lille will be playing their brand of football, which is very good and very good on the eye. But if Villa can kind of overthrow that, I suppose, with their physicality and their know-how, that will put us in good stead to win that tie and hopefully secure our place in the Champions League as well in the final few games of the season, because that is needed, and we do have it. But yeah, specifically defending set pieces and things like that, that's that's kind of been an Achilles heel. So it helps with Zaniolo and Rodgers for sure.
Matt, not a question that's on the list, but let's just treat this like the post-match reaction for a second, and you and me have just finished watching the game. Something that we didn't speak about yesterday, me and Matt Lynch, was Youri Tielemans' performance overall. I thought was very, very good. Obviously gets the assist for Watkins' goal. But that effort that he rattled off the bar and the post would have been a goal of the season contender. We just got carried away with the emotions of yesterday and forgot to mention him, but how good was he yesterday?
You thought it was going to potentially be one of those days with like Watkins hitting the inside of the post and he coming back and Tielemans doing his best to kind of, you know, smash the woodwork. I think his vision surprised me. It sounds a bit silly, but we know that he can pop up with a couple of goals, but some of the passes he started seeing passes quite early and delivering them, slide rule passes and stuff. And I think I don't know how much you spoke about it, but post match, but we haven't had a question about it. But I think we've got to give Ollie Watkins a little bit of love on this as well. I love the fact that he's kind of taking his opportunity to have a pop at Troy Deeney as well. So that always always brings me a little.
He had a pop at the Nick Stone as well, but that'll be an embargo quote, I think, for tonight.
Oh, John, you keep giving all these little spoilers, don't you? So, he's got a little bit of feistiness about him. He seems like the world's loveliest man, but he's got a bit of feistiness about him, and I think he knows how good he is now. Yeah. And it was like the qualities of his finishing. I know it took a slight deflection, didn't it, the goal, but to have the presence of mind to, was it Smith Rowe who he held off? I think it was, wasn't it? To have the presence of mind to hold him off and then, draw the keeper in. And I'm not sure Watkins a couple of seasons ago would have been able to finish or had the confidence to finish like that. And then there's him lapping up all the adulation of the away end. And I don't know if you saw it, John, he'd obviously be racing across London around the time, but his interview that he did with him and Emi Martinez was, despite the line of questioning from the reporter being heavily Arsenal, it was just kind of lovely, the respect that Martinez has got for him in leading the campaign for Ollie to be player of the season. I think he's got a decent shout. I'm sure whether he's glamorous enough to get it, I'm not sure, but I think he definitely needs to be in the conversation.
Having that podcast next week. We're going to do a whole episode about that.
I was listening to his BBC interview as well, and it struck me, and it shouldn't have, that he's in the race for the Golden Boot. And I don't know why that's so mind-boggling, but he's got a great shout of winning that.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
he's going to score probably 20 goals now. But that's it's kind of just crept up on me that, oh, wow, Aston Villa could have their first winner of the Golden Boot in Premier League history, I would have thought. Remarkable. Most assists as well. Like, he is player of the season currently, unless something dramatic happens from other players. He has to be, surely. I don't care. I don't care who wins the league. Yes, yeah. Rodgers played well, but Ollie Watkins has had... This is an individual award. No one's had a better individual season than Ollie Watkins, and that's a fact.
Well, I'm going to shut down this conversation because, like I said, we are doing this podcast next week, and it'll probably have a stinker against Bournemouth now, but we'll talk about him in more detail next week. Let's move on then. Matt, you started to talk about the kind of bias against us in the media earlier. I shut you down a little bit knowing that there was questions about it later in the show, so let's get those out of the way. These are the last two serious football ones. From John, first of all, not John Townley. Villa are frequently ignored by the media when matches against traditional top six sides happen. Isn't it time the media takes a long, hard look at their inadequate reporting leading up to matches like this? They always seem surprised when a team like Villa do well. And Bob says, we've had to listen to pundits and ex-pros. Jamie Redknapp, I'm looking at you. Not even mention us for top four. It was only ever Spurs. But do you think we will one day get the recognition we deserve? Now, even like when Sky do their kind of highlights at the end, and they've got like the little graphic down in the bottom corner of like what the thing is you're watching. For the Emi Martinez save in the first half, that was labelled as Trossard miss. It's like, really? Is it not Martinez save in that instance? That's such a minor thing. But again, all these little things all build up to go, come on, where's our attention?
Merson said as well, obviously Merson's got a foot in both camps with being ex-Arsenal and ex-Villa, but he said, it's not a good save. It's a terrible miss. And you're thinking, come on, give the guy some credit.
Didn't know that. That's mad. This is an unbelievable save.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then Jamie Redknapp talking in the context of the Liverpool game and the Liverpool Palace and Arsenal Villa has described them as, in his post-match stuff, he said, well, you'd have thought they were two home bankers. And you're thinking, two home bankers. Like John said, I think Arsenal started the day in third, didn't they? So it was third versus, well, finished the day in third as well. Is that right? I've just lost track of the table. You should know that because it's the only bit of the table I ever see, but I only care about where
Arsenal are second now. So they were second yesterday as well.
Oh, right. Okay. So second versus fourth. No wonder we've forgotten
this. But John's right. What he said earlier, if this is 2009 and that's Liverpool, Chelsea, third versus second in the race for the title, even if it wasn't, then it was the title contender and a top four contender, not two title challengers going neck and neck. It's Super Sunday, isn't it? And this massive game of two colossals coming together. But it's right when it's the other way around and it's somebody who is kind of acting above their station. Last year when it's Liverpool, Newcastle, it's not billed as this massive game, whereas it should be, because it's where you are in the league going against each other rather than big club versus overachieving club. It's just so unfair. It doesn't matter, but we continue to talk about it every week.
It's not going to stop either, because the facts are in the media. Sky Sports are going to be talking about the bigger club. The bigger clubs, the clubs that have a massive fan base or a bigger fan base than Villa in America and across the world. And that's just where it is. So it's like, for as much as we complain and say that we need to be spoken about more, we should, but that's not how the media is working at the moment, is it? Like, that's, we're working it. We understand that. So I think,
Do you know what I think we're lacking? I think we're lacking a Aston Villa pundit.
We got Gabby.
To be fair to Gabby, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want him on the Sky Sports stuff, but at least fair to Gabby, he does fly the flag for Villa. But if you look at the BBC kind of match of the day, Sky kind of thing, you never really have a strong voice in there. I suppose Dion Dub, who's associated with Aston Villa, you've got Paul Merson, who played for Aston Villa, but he's associated as being an Arsenal man and stuff like that. So, you know, Redknapp can steer the conversation back to Spurs and to Liverpool, and you've got loads of United pundits on there in terms of, you know, Neville and Keane, et cetera, and Ferdinand. But you've not really got anybody really flying the flag for Villa on there. So they all also, you know, you've got Carragher, Liverpool, they gravitate towards their clubs. Yeah. I don't know whether we've got anybody who does that for us.
And normally I wouldn't take massive umbrage against that if Villa were 12th and we still did exactly what we did yesterday, but it was like, well, Villa, they're not going to get Europe, they're not going to go down. Like, Villa aren't the story in that instance. It is all about Arsenal drop points. I kind of get that from the wider perspective that this broadcast is going out across the world, like Villa in mid-table aren't the story there. But like you say, just take away the club names and the colours and the badges. This is second versus fourth, and fourth have beaten second on second's home stadium, done the double over them. It shouldn't just be about, well, Arsenal have had an off day, because that wasn't the case. It was that Villa were very, very good, and that just does not seem to get the credit. And we need, what is it, Lee Hendry to do our bidding for us? Is that the go-to for us in the media? And Ian Taylor every so often, who will obviously fly the flag for us. But you're right, there isn't that representation for Villa, because I suppose up until now, Villa weren't, or probably aren't in some quarters, Villa weren't sexy enough for that. There isn't an outstanding candidate to be that representative, because we've not, this sounds bad to say as Villa fans on our Villa podcast, but we weren't relevant till now.
So we've basically got to wait 10 years for Ollie Watkins to retire and then get him in Sky Sports Studio.
Yeah, get McGinn on Super Sunday in a few years' time. We'll finally get some recognition or Tyrone Mings or something like that. The final couple of questions of the show are the non-football related ones that John absolutely loves. Although the first one is football related, it's just not specific to this season. So we'll start with that. Adam says, classic game, start, bench and sell. I'll come to you first, John. Three strikers, Dwight York, Christian Benteke and Ollie Watkins. Start, bench and sell.
Well, this is my opinion. I've never watched Dwight York live, so Ollie Watkins, start, bench York, and which sounds mad because I just said that, I've never watched him live. Sell Benteke. If we're talking about football right now, that is, because I just think...
Are you saying that Dwight York couldn't do it in 2024?
No. I'm saying that I don't think Benteke would be as influential as what Dwight York would be right now for this Villa team.
Yeah, I think that's fair, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm putting Ollie Watkins there because this is the best campaign I've seen an Aston Villa striker have.
Full stop. Yeah. I've always had Benteke as like my favourite striker. I think Watkins has surpassed that now. He's the one, isn't he? He's that guy.
Yeah, and I'm not taking anything away from what Benteke did, because he was an absolute dream for what he was doing for Villa back then. But I just think football has changed a little bit. He'd still be very effective for what he was doing, because he was an excellent player. He was scoring overhead kicks and you know, fantastic footballer, and he probably doesn't get as much credit as what he deserves in that regard. But we're talking about Ollie Watkins and Dwight York, who I don't want to say sell Benteke, but it's judging off against those two, I think that's fair.
If there's any queries in that for you, Matt, and you can't cover cop out and say something like, well, 50-year-old Dwight York wouldn't be very good these days.
Well, that's ruined it. That was exactly what I was going to say. Well, can I say that Ollie Watkins doesn't take penalties, so Dwight York's going to have to start alongside him?
No, you can't say that.
I want to play two up top anyway. I love nostalgia, so Dwight would still start.
Okay.
Even though the you know, we have this argument, don't we, about Dwight York since he's left Villa, went to Blues, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm always of the opinion better to have loved than to have lost than never to have loved at all, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll start Dwight.
I've heard you say that so many times.
I know. Just clip me in. I'll start Dwight. He's got to be Watkins, hasn't it? Because he's just... You know, I think the kind of almost like the evolution of Ollie Watkins as well has been a pleasure to see, because I didn't know a great deal about him when we signed him. You know, you could see that he got the raw ingredients to be a good player. But I think he's kicked on to another level under this current coach. And we don't know, we're not at the beginning of the journey, but we're still, hopefully, this journey with Ollie Watkins got a long way to go. So I don't want to sell him. I don't really want to annoy him by putting him on the bench, but I think he'll know that, you know, I'm doing it in good faith and I do love him. So, start York, bench Ollie, and Benteke, we'll take what we can get for him.
I need to get this up on a different tab so I can see John's face as I'm reading it out, because I just know he's going to roll his eyes. Edward says, would you rather be you with your face, John, and your body as a human, but with the brain of a chimpanzee? Or would you rather be a chimpanzee and the body of a chimpanzee, but with your brain? John, what are you going to go for?
First option.
What do you mean the first option? You'd rather be you, but with the brain of a chimpanzee? How's that going to work?
Well, how's it going to work if I'm a chimpanzee?
Surely the most important part of you is the brain part. You need to keep the human brain.
Yeah, but I can't. Yeah, but if you're a chimpanzee, what do you expect me to do? Go around Tesco? They won't let me in.
I've got a bit of a kind of Homer Simpson vibe going on. I think Homer's a bit like kind of a brain and a body of a chimpanzee. And I think I'm kind of, it wouldn't involve too much change for me. So I don't really mind, to be honest. I get John's point that Funkin still is John Townley, but, you know, is he going to be able to run for the tube? Probably. He'd be like,
swing along lines and stuff.
We'd probably have a proper Villa takeover of London if we like become a bit King Kong-y, can't we? Swinging from stadium to stadium.
If you think logically, you'll just be put in a zoo, wouldn't you? And that would be horrible.
But because you're the greatest chimpanzee ever. This is the most intelligent.
That sounds horrible.
No, but the most intelligent chimpanzee ever, because he's as clever as a human being was. He's as clever as John Townley used to be.
We're only saying it's mine or John's brain. We're no danger of us being the most intelligent chimpanzee ever, man.
No, I 100% the first one. I think you'd be horrible. You'd be stuck in a cage because you'd be too good for your own. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, well, the flip side of that then. So you're still you, right? You still work for Reach. You've still got to do the podcast. But you're a chimpanzee in your brain. How's that going to work?
Couldn't talk.
Well, yeah, but you... we're just going to have to end the show. I can't quite get my head around it.
But you can't function as a human if you're a chimpanzee. You just can't. You can't walk down the street. You'll get tranquilized. Like, they'd shoot you. Chimpanzee can't just stroll around.
Yeah. But they shoot you if you've got a chimpanzee brain and you're flinging your crap everywhere. You know what I mean? You're kind of bearing your big chimpanzee backside. You're probably still going to get shot either way, aren't you? I mean, I don't think there's a good outcome in this, Dan.
No, well, that's what we've been asked, isn't it, by Edward? It's two bad situations. I just think if it's you, but you've got the brain of a chimpanzee, which is an inferior species to a human being. No disrespect to the chimpanzee community, but that is just how it is. What's the limit of what you're still you, and you still feature as you as a body, but you're so limited to have a chimpanzee brain.
Yeah, you don't know any different. If I have my brain and I know that I'm a chimpanzee and I have to live in a zoo with the chimpanzees, no thanks.
I think we need to do a spin-off on this, really, and interrogate. Get some experts on. get some chimp-brained, human-bodied experts on to guide us through this.
I think the answer is very obvious. I couldn't think of anything worse.
That's very obvious.
Is it? I can't understand that. Why would I want to be in an animal body with a human brain, knowing that full well that's hell. That's horrible.
Yeah, but you could probably escape really easily.
But you probably could if you got your own brain and a chimpanzee's body, with the kind of medical science now and with cosmetic surgery and stuff.
You can't escape. You can't just walk down the road. You've got to get in a car, and then you can't drive because you can't reach the clutch. Like, it doesn't work. Trust me, it doesn't work.
I'm going to end it there because we're going to go round and round in circles. But please, if you're listening to this and you've got this far, leave a comment down below saying chimpanzee brain so we know you've got this far. If you've got any more questions like this, we've done an hour's record here, but that was my favourite section to see how worked up John's getting over what he always says is the stupid question of the show. He's so passionate about it, and I absolutely love that. So if you've got any more like that, Edward, or anyone else, please get in touch for next week's episode. Matt, John, thank you so much for your time this week. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk about such a brilliant win at the weekend. We now look forward to Lille. John, you're off to France tomorrow, where we'll be bringing a couple of podcasts from France. We'll be doing a post-match show on Thursday as well, and then leading up to Bournemouth on the weekend. Another huge week for Villa, with the opportunity for more points and cup progression. Matt, what do you want to say?
Just saying that John got to go in quarantine for a bit before he's out in France, or not. I just don't know how it works.
Thanks, everyone, for watching. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all very soon. Bye-bye.